Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
With cutbacks in trade and foreign aid, is Africa no longer a priority for the United States? President Donald Trump has never visited the continent during his presidency, and the repercussions of America's foreign policy towards Africa are being felt by thousands of people on the continent, especially women. The BBC's Nomsa Maseko reports from Lesotho.
Hundreds of sewing machines rattle away at this factory. An army of workers, mostly women, make thousands and thousands of pairs of jeans every day. All thanks to the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, known as AGOA, which allows 40 sub-Saharan African countries to export goods duty-free to the United States. This trade agreement has helped to revive the textile industry here in Lesotho, a small mountain kingdom landlocked within South Africa. But America may not renew this trade agreement come 2025, and people here are worried they could all lose their jobs. David Chen employs more than 1,600 workers.
Oh, it's going to be very terrible. You know, I hope it will be extended. Because, you see, if it ended, it might face up that we have to close down because we cannot compete, you know, with the outside world.
And it's not just trade. Decisions taken in America are affecting hundreds of thousands of women here in Africa. In 2017, President Donald Trump reintroduced a policy that restricts funding to organizations providing or advocating for abortions. Since then, there's been a 40% increase in terminations of pregnancies in African countries that depend on U.S. aid. Madila Tladi is from Lesotho's Planned Parenthood Association.
Consequences are dire because We are talking of high rates of unintended pregnancies, particularly among young couples, as well as young girls.
We are in Hamojela village. It's very scenic, literally mountains surrounding this village. And I'm actually outside the gate of a clinic that has been closed. The condom box is empty. People here need those condoms, but there's no one here to provide them because the clinic's been closed for a very long time. Even the gate is locked, and just across the fence there are chairs that are stacked, rusting away literally, because this clinic has been closed. And this is the picture across Africa. Many clinics like this one have been closed because the US has cut its funding. This means a decision taken in Washington means that many women across the African continent have nowhere else to turn. They don't have access to contraceptives. Just standing here outside the clinic, I met two women who have been impacted by that decision. Malerato Nyaye is one of them.
I used to visit the clinic every month to collect contraceptives, but I've now been forced to buy them because the clinic is closed. I can't afford to do that every month, and I fear I'll fall pregnant.
In the last few years, it's clear that Africa has become less of a priority for America, and that's left a gap for China, which is now Africa's biggest trade partner.
A huge amount of Africa's infrastructure is backed by China's funding. This road is one of those projects. It's 91 kilometers long, and construction started here about a year ago. There are all kinds of road construction machines here, and most of them have Mandarin written on them. And some are digging into the surface, others flattening it, and then watering the road to prevent dust.
China is building roads, ports, and airports all over Africa in an effort to strengthen its presence. China became a major player in Africa long before President Trump came into power. But Beijing has accelerated its influence on the continent under the Trump administration. While President Trump's mission is to make America great, His administration has largely remained disengaged with one of the world's fastest growing regions. As the world's attention turns to America's election, the major question for Africa is whether the upcoming polls will produce fundamental changes in U.S. foreign policy towards Africa.
Nomsa Maseko in Lesotho.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, October 25, 2020. So I have been told this is our global Sunday talk on racism. We do this once a month, try to check in with some of our listeners, folks who have counter-racist views, who are in different parts of the world, just to see what's happening in their part of the world, how things are being reported, what some of their suggestions, questions might be in towards helping solve this problem. Also, with everything that's happening right now with the U.S. presidential election, as you heard in the report, thought it would be great to get some of their thoughts, who they think is going to win, how the election is being reported, talked about in their specific part of the world. It's been so many things happening. It's Black History Month in the UK. So, you know, see what, I don't know what they do for those festivities over there. But with so many things happening, thought it would be grand to be able to check in with them. For folks who are in the States, the number 720-716-7300, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you have questions, comments, all the rest, feel free. I guess if we have folks, sometimes we do, if we have any folks who are outside the States, you should go ahead and get a hand up right now. That way you don't have to wait. We'll chat it up with some of our international folks first, and then folks, if you're in the States, if you have questions or what have you, we'll get you as well. But if you dialed in, you are outside the States, definitely hand up. We'll get you on the line pronto. The report that we heard, that was from the BBC, them talking about the impact of the election. They had a report. I just want to share a little bit and then we'll get right to the folks. They had a report in the Financial Times and they were talking about contact with former Vice President Joe Biden, Democratic candidate. And they say concerns grow inside Downing Street as polls point to Biden victory. British officials have not been able to meet a single senior member of Joe Biden's foreign policy team in recent weeks, hampering Downing Street's preparations for what might happen should the Democratic candidate win next week's election. Foreign office staff had hoped to meet Mr. Biden's closet foreign policy advisors in the run-up to the presidential election on November 3, but senior officials in London and Washington said the UK had been rebuffed as part of a strategy by his team to avoid meeting foreign governments during the campaign. The lack of contact has made it harder for Boris Johnson's government to plan for what might happen should Mr. Biden win, as polls predict. Mr. Johnson has formed a strong bond with Donald Trump, the U.S. president, and some in London are concerned they have not been able to foster such close links with his opponent, potentially throwing the future of a U.S.-UK trade agreement into doubt. We will stop there. The Rona, so many things to chat it up with. I'm going to take one sec to dial one of our other folks before we get rolling. Let's see. That way I don't have to do an interruption with the call in between. We'll see if it get an answer this time. Let's see. If I don't dialing Andrew, one of our folks in the UK. If I don't get him this time, I'll wait a few. We'll talk a little bit and then I'll dial him again. He had emailed and said, absolutely, I'll be there. And even pitched questions, no less, was actively engaged in the email. So I'll just try him again and see if we can nab him a bit later. And they did have a time change this week. There is typically an 8-hour difference between I'm in Seattle, one of our folks in the UK. For them, it's 8 hours. We have African 1884 with us. He's in Austria. It is typically a 9-hour difference for Austria, but now I believe that's 8 hours. So I think if they had the time change and all, I'll have to double check. African 1884, are you with us, sir? Oh, make sure.
Yes, I am, Gus. Good evening, good afternoon. How are you?
Awesome. I'm right poorly, but glad to have you with us, sir. So let's see if they did the time change. So what time is it for you, sir?
Right now it's 8:14.
8:14.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's they. It used to be way back, what seems like eons ago, we did the daylight saving time change, like the spring forward, fall back. It was synchronized. So in the U.S., they would do all that at the same time. That switched somewhere within the last, I think, 15 to 20 years. That might be a little interesting side project if someone wants to research that. But it switched, so we don't switch at the same time. So for a short window each year, it's no longer a 9-hour time difference between Austria. It drops to 8 hours, and then it corrects within a week or so when we set our clocks back. But that's just one of the little tidbits. Mr. Fuller says, try to learn something about everything. That is one of the little odd wrinkles that I have learned in doing the program. And, oh, we don't switch the clocks at the same time. And makes it even more challenging to coordinate. All of that to say, for Andrew, it's normally an 8-hour difference. Now it's a 7-hour difference. So for him, it's, we would normally be doing this for him at 8 p.m. Now it's 7 p.m. for him that we're doing the program. Anywho, very good to hear from you, African 1884. I hope you are getting along as safely as possible. I was going to ask, because they have Black History Month in the UK. Do they even have Black History Month in Austria, or do you all have enough black people for that?
Yes, we do. And they usually have it around February, you know, because it varies. I think in the diaspora, I think the US, I think they have it around this time, and then we have it around February. I don't know how it is in the UK.
Hmm. That is interesting. That's interesting, because that's when we have it, in February. Like, it could be, we could all get on Zoom now. It could be coordinated, dodge penises and everything. But it's supposed to be Black History Month in the UK. I don't know if that means they watch The Hate U Give or how they celebrate. Hopefully we'll get Andrew in before we go off air, and he can give us some of the details. I guess we will get to the election and all that jazz. But I mean, wow, when I looked at the BBC and some of the foreign outlets, the Rona is the headline. Now, they do have the U.S. election, and that is big news. But I mean, the Rona has kind of bumped all of that. I looked at France 24, their big headline, Europe sounds alarm over second wave of COVID-19 infections, as WHO warns, World Health Organization warns of exponential rise. I mean, wow. I'm just going to read a little bit of the report and then get African 1884 to kind of give us what he's been seeing, hearing in Austria. So it reads, the European Union's disease control agency has joined frantic health workers to sound the alarm over a coronavirus surge across the continent, as the World Health Organization warned of an exponential rise in infections. Even countries that avoided severe outbreaks during Europe's first wave of contagion in the spring have watched their case numbers surge, with Germany's death toll passing 10,000 on Saturday. Governments have reintroduced continent measures to slow the renewed spread of the virus in nations that only weeks earlier believed they had triumphed over the crisis. But populations weary of social isolation and economic hardship have pushed back against fresh restrictions, including overnight clashes in hard-hit Naples between Italian police and hundreds of protesters. I will stop there. I mean, Wow. Now, I think with African 1884, he's been with us a few times over the summer and what have you. I think you said in Austria, they were behaved, no riots, no protests. People were accepting the restrictions and behaving in accordance. What's the conduct now? Is it, or I guess, is there heightened attention about all this? What's happening?
Yes. Thank you, Gus. So currently, right now, just as you rightly said it, the whole of Europe, the numbers are increasing, and specifically to Austria, they would have cases in a day, would have about maybe 3,000 cases per day. So the government has decided to relaunch the old measures. Now there's strictly making sure that the number of people in a home are not more. Let's say if you have guests over at your place, you shouldn't have more than 6 people who are not living in the same household visiting at one time. They've even told neighbors or people around the community, if they see a situation where maybe someone has a house party and they have 15 guests or 20 or something, then they're likely to call the police and, you know, and snitch on that person. Another thing is that now you have to wear the mask all out through the underground. But I think they're also trying to introduce that on a daily basis, where if you just walk into the streets, you should also wear the mask. There's a little pushback on that. And recently the vice president had a press conference and he said, okay, if you don't want us to introduce the strict measures, then please everyone just abide with what measures that we had previously in the lockdown around February and March of this year. So they're really telling people to be very careful, and they really emphasize that, because there's, like I said, there's been a pushback and some people saying that, okay, this whole Rona thing has been exaggerated, and that it's a plan by the elites to try and bring in a new economic model into the whole world. So the vice president recently said that he knows that people are skeptical about what the coronavirus is and what the extent of its damage and everything and how people are affected. And they're going to be very strict in that regard. So he was pleading to the people, saying, listen, if you don't want us to be very strict on the new measures, please just go back to the way we were in around February, March, where everyone is wearing the masks and people are well behaved. Because, again, like I said, there was a certain number of people were rising up and saying, well, these are all just a hoax and everything. So there's been a pushback from the state in regard to that.
The Rona truthers. Wow. Okay. Now, we have had that. Have you all had people out with guns and such saying, you know, we're not going to wear a mask and, you know, we will kidnap the prime minister and threatening folks? And has it gotten to that extreme, or have they just had signs and a loud voice thus far?
No, just signs and loud voice. And just to speak to that specifically, there was a case recently where a young African was riding the train and he didn't have a mask on, and he was told to exit the train, and he put up some resistance. Then they have all these security people within the train that are not police, but have been trained to make sure that there's some form of security in the trains or the bus or in the underground or the public transport. So these people held him down, and they kind of like they put him down on the floor, face down, and had him pinned to the ground for about 15 minutes. And people came around recording that and everything. And since we've had the situation with the Black Lives Matter movement, the George Floyd situation, so this was put out in the media and saying, okay, how would they treat a black person like that and everything? Then the police and the people who control and manage the underground system said, yeah, you have to wear a mask. And if you don't wear a mask, that's how you're going to be treated. So it has nothing to do with color or race or anything. But the black community here was pushing back and saying it had to do with race. Yeah, so people coming out with guns, no, we don't have anything like that.
Black male privilege. Black male privilege. incidentally, that does not sound like social distancing. Like I thought, you're supposed to be like 2 meters back at least, and, you know, keep your distance, and I gotta subdue somebody and physically straddle them to keep them on the ground. Like, ew, that they don't have enough hand sanitizer in the world. That is, whew, man, That, I don't know. Like, you would have to have a firearm to do that here. Like, I would not want that job to be on the train or anything out in public or at a business or something. And as many folks as we've had here who have been defiant, to as many white people as we have had be defiant to wearing masks here. Can you imagine that? Like, tackling some man, people have been shot and killed. I'm laughing, but I mean, that's, people have been killed here in the States over that type of thing. Like, going and telling somebody you got to wear a mask and all the rest of it. Like, literally, people have died over that. Like, you know, it has gotten violent super quick. Anyway.
But Gus?
Yes, sir.
Sorry, can I just add on something that's also in regard to the new measures? What they've introduced right now is that if you're going to any restaurant, pub, or bar, you have to provide them with your contact details, your full name as it appears in your passport, your address, and your telephone number. So I think they're doing this for contact tracing. So what it is that if even if you're visiting a coffee shop and you just have just a tea or juice and you're going to just be there for 2 or 3 minutes, you just walk into a restaurant, a bar, or a coffee shop, you have to provide them with your contact information. Now, this has also got some pushback from the people. So, and then the spill effect of that is that a lot of businesses and restaurants now are not getting people fraternizing them because no one wants to leave their information, telephone number, just because they're out to have a Coke or a coffee and everything, you know. So that's something that's been introduced, a new measure. You all have to give your contact details if you visit a restaurant, a pub, or anywhere, if you want to eat something or drink something, yeah.
Wow. Now that, I have been staying at home anyway and advising hunkering down. Wow. I would for sure be recommending hunker down. Get, you know, you can ease, they got YouTube videos and all that. You can brew coffee at home, or whatever else you need. Like, yeah, I would not be doing any of that. If it contacts, you know, we care about you. If there's an, yeah, I'm good. I'm going to stay at home. Thank you kindly. I guess pausing just to remember, since you've been with us before, as a parent, what has been, and a parent of a very young child, what has been your response to all of this?
My wife and I have not been moving a lot, you know, especially if we're moving with a child, we've not been moving a lot. So we just, for the most part, just try and minimize the movement with a young one. But otherwise, myself, I've been working from home. I mean, I alternate. 1 week I work from home and 1 week I go into the office. So we're trying to minimize the movement with the young one, you know.
That's smart. Right on. I guess, wow. So you're doing the mask thing when you go out. You said you're alternating. So the one time you go out, you have to.
Yeah. You have to do the mask thing. Do the mask thing. You can't just go out like that. I mean, also in the working space, especially if you have a shared office, you're gonna have to wear a mask all the time. And if you don't have a shared office, if you're walking around the corridor, if you're going 3 floors down, let's say it's a 13-story building, if you're going 3 floors down, you have to wear the mask. If you leave your desk, you have to wear the mask. You know, but if you go back on your desk and you're alone in the office, you can remove the mask. But if you're not alone, then you have to wear the mask at all times. And folks are doing it.
Compliance. Now, see that, you know, we've had lots of that non-compliance with it. In fact, white specifically, I read that report from CNN yesterday, white non-compliance. In fact, they said in the state of Mississippi specifically, that there has been so much white non-compliance that it has started to switch in terms of the rates of who is getting the virus, that it's no longer disproportionately black people. Now it's disproportionately white people because so many of them have been ignoring the rules and regulations and all the rest of it. At least that's what they reported from Mississippi. That was on CNN yesterday. They said it that explicitly, exactly the way I just said it. But anywho, number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, if we have folks, if you're outside the states and have a thought or two, feel free to press *61. We'll get you in immediately, and then we'll get in our folks from the states if you have questions and such as well. Wanted to make sure I asked about the election also, the U.S. presidential election, certainly more than one thing to vote about in the world. We are a few days out, and at least I am told the president of the United States, still one of, if not the most powerful people in the world, this job has a big impact worldwide, as you heard in the report at the beginning. How is the election, or is it even being talked about? Is all the attention on the Rona? Is the election being talked about over there? And if so, how is it being discussed?
Well, Austria is getting very much more focused. I mean, what's really, really taking the focus of the government and the media is mainly the Rona, the coronavirus. Not much has been talked about the U.S. presidential elections. Not any expectations. I think maybe because, again, it's a white space. So in terms of impact regarding foreign policy, I don't think Austria needs to really take so much into consideration, you know. So they're not really focusing on that so much. What now they're focusing on, I mean, surprisingly, what the media put out recently and what we also had a demonstration, two demonstrations this past week, was the situation in Nigeria with the SARS.
That is what Andrew, he had emailed. He was like, oh, I think we should make sure that we talk about that. That's important. The protests, so this is Nigeria, as he said, they've had protests. They've been using the acronym Protests Against SARS. Now, when I saw that the first time, I was like, what? Are they protesting against the respiratory illness? Because that's right, like, that's the acronym for the respiratory infection. I forgot what all the letter stands for, but I mean, that's COVID-19. Like, it's like, are they having Rona? Like, I was so confused. Like, I could not get it together for a long time. And then I had to go and read and reread. It's like, oh, this is police violence. Like, this is not like Rona related or respiratory infection at all. So just for folks, so they have a little bit more information. This is from the BBC. Protests began on the 7th of October with mostly young people demanding the scrapping of a notorious police unit, the Special Anti-Robbery Squads, SARS. Although President Buhari said it had been dissolved on 11 October, the protests have carried on and broadened to include demands for broader reforms in the way Nigeria is governed. I will stop there, but this has been like huge news. They've had like protests and all kinds of things. Like, once I got past the confusion around this is not respiratory, this is like police. Oh, okay. Then I did have a slight like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they have like major events and things happen in Nigeria on like a regular basis. Like, how frequently do they talk about major events in Nigeria? And this time it happens to be like police violence. It's like, that's interesting. But how is that being talked about over there? Is that big news in Austria or your portion of Europe? People talking about these Nigeria protests?
Yes, that's big news. And they had today, we had a demonstration today. On Wednesday, they had also a demonstration. This was just in Vienna. They had three demonstrations already, and they're going to have other demonstrations in other cities around Austria. And unfortunately, there was a situation in one of the demonstrations where the Nigerians, I would say all Africans, you know, I think some of them were maybe from the Congo, from Ethiopia, from Somalia, went to the Nigerian embassy, and they confronted one embassy official, and they almost beat him up. So what happened is that the Austrian police, we're talking about the most racist white supremacist police, you know, in Europe, the Austrian police is that, you know, and I can say that clearly out. So the Austrian police defended this African man from other Africans, you know, because you know, they're trying to protect the rule of law and everything. So they defended this African from other Africans because they wanted to beat him up because he works for the government and for the embassy. So they see that he's responsible for the for what's happening with the police violence, and he should say something. So the whole picture, they had this on video where you had these racist white supremacist suspects protecting embassy official from other Africans. He's an African and he's being protected by the racist white supremacists from other Africans. And this brought up a discussion. I was trying to tell folks that when we're trying to solve our problems and we're trying to see the government officials as a problem, we'll end up confronting the racist white supremacists because they'll tell you, hey, that's not how you do it. You know, don't beat him now, or don't put up a coup and everything. And if you put up a coup, we're going to give you the weapons. And if you're going to have an election, we're going to send in election officials and everything, you know. So it just gave an example of how the system is just wall up, wall down. And it's such a pity that many of the Nigerians here, they're really mad at the government, and they're rightfully to be like that. You know, I'm not taking that from them. But then again, they're not framing it within the context of racism, white supremacy, you know. So that picture looked bad. That video looked bad when you saw the white Austrian police defending a black government official from Nigeria from his own people who are going to beat him down. Yet those police themselves don't like black folks, straight up and down. They'll arrest you, racially profile you, and deport you immediately from Austria if they have a chance to. You know, so yeah, I had to put that out, sorry.
Context of white supremacy, global system. Now see, with an incident like that, that makes me even more suspicious. In a year where there have been global they were protesting George Floyd in Austria.
Yes.
All over the world, right? We had one of our guests in Japan talked about how they were having protests in the midst of the Rona. Like, they took that really serious and had government officials were upset about them going out and flouting social distance to do this, all this marching and everything. How is it? Stop. Like I said, when do people stop and hold protests and marches or even talk to you about anything related to Nigeria? Who even knows where Lagos is? At least I can speak from a stateside perspective. Like, they don't talk about that at all. How is it now? Wham! Like, oh my goodness. They're protesting police violence in Nigeria. Like, that just gives me great pause. In a year where there's been so many protests about violence, white police violence against black people, to have, oh man, they're protesting and going crazy in Nigeria, look. And then with this, the end result is going to be black people going to beat up another black person. Now let's see. So when they were upset, the folks in Austria, probably some pretend white people too, or white people pretending that they were upset, when they were upset about Mr. Floyd, did anybody go and get the U.S. to the U.S. consulate?
No.
To the U.S. embassy and grab, because I suspect it's a white person, and grab and say, look here, George Floyd, we care about George Floyd. What are you doing about it? Grab him by the collar and shake him, you know, three or four. That didn't happen?
No, it did not. It did not. No. And I did participate in the Black Lives Matter movement demonstrations here in Austria. That did not happen. We were very calm, all of us, you know, we were very respectful and everything, you know. And it was such a pity when I saw this happening recently in regard to that Nigerian official, you know. And the thing is that a lot of the people here, again, they're not willing to look at our reality from a holistic perspective and see where all this comes from. They were sharing videos where you had the Nigerian government. This is in Lagos, in Nigeria, where they were rolling out tanks and military personnel on the streets to manage the demonstrations. And those tanks, none of them are manufactured in Africa. And if you look at the value chain of manufacturing and producing those tanks, I'm sure Austria is part of that. I'm sure Germany is part of that. I'm sure France is part of that. I'm sure the US is part of that, you know. But the people, we've been put in a situation where it's hard for us to think system-like and to connect dots. You know, we've been beat down so much. So we look at the immediate black person that we see in front of us, and that's the one we want to confront. You know, but to apply system thinking and connect the dots, it will require a lot for our people to do that. And unfortunately, when we're talking about the demonstrations and NSARS here in Austria, it has taken that direction. Today, people are screaming. They wanted to get the president of Nigeria, Buhari, from his position of presidency. That's what they're calling for, you know. They're not talking about the whole system of racism and white supremacy. They're just saying, okay, reform the police and Buhari must stop being the president of Nigeria, you know. And rightfully, in the UK, there was a member of parliament. She's from Nigeria. She was trying to ask the British government what role they had in supplying weapons and military training and police training to Nigeria that has maybe a contribution to the SARS police and the acts and mistreatment on black bodies in Nigeria.
Absolutely amazing. Wow. Context of white supremacy. Now again, I thought we had all of this. We were concerned about George Floyd. Isn't that what they said? We love Breonna Taylor. Isn't that what they said? Say her name. Anybody? Hey, let's go. We are going to put all of our international weight. That Donald Trump, they got an election here, right? Right in the middle of the season. They could have shook their finger and you are not going to treat black people like that. This is a disgrace. And then go around and interview all their white cousins. Anybody, you have been helping the U.S. mistreat niggers. Oh, you are going to answer to us right now. We're going to have some. Come on. At most, maybe you get a paper from the UN, which is pretty worthless. Toilet paper shortage, UN paper. But I mean, come on. That, not understanding what he said consistently. Not understanding system of white supremacy, global system. The response, you see that anywhere in the world when you don't understand racism, white supremacy. Dr. Welsing used to say it, the reflexive response, as we have been trained, smack another black person, blame another black person. It's your fault. You did it. It's your fault. Let's go get that black person. Gotta have a white person there to provide security. Suspected racist. Race soldier with a badge, no less, got to have them there to provide protection for another black person.
And Gus, can I add something?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, this is right fresh in my memory, my mind and everything, because it's going on right now. And like I said, the elections have not been talked about, the US elections, but this has been talked about and for doing things about it. One other thing is that you have to understand is that in Austria, I think in almost all other parts of the world, especially within the diaspora, is that as black people, if you're going to go out to demonstrate in Austria, you have to ask the racist white supremacist suspects for permission to demonstrate. You can't hold a demonstration without asking them for permission. So with these three demonstrations that took place in Vienna regarding NSARS, black people had to ask the racist white supremacist for permission. So the West Washington say, okay, we're going to let you. Okay, so tell us how do you want to do this demonstration? So, you know, make sure you don't break anything. Then you have to, you know, you explain to them what you're going to do and what it's all about and everything. Then they'll tell you, okay, fine. So you guys are going to walk from this block to that block. Okay, that's fine. And how many are you going to be? Approximately 1,000. Okay, cool. We'll provide you protection and everything too in case maybe, you know, someone wants to disrupt your demonstration. But yeah, you've got permission for us now. Go ahead and do it, you know. That is our reality, you know. But for the most part, most of the black folks don't look at that. You know, they don't question that kind of reality and say, wait a minute, you know, I'm trying to make a change here and I'm still asking white folks for help. And yet it's them that are part of my problem, you know. And then at the end of the day, I'm still going to look at another black person and say, OK, that's the one I can easily reach out to and attack. And that's the one I want to attack. And that's my enemy and everything, you know. So there's been a lot of tribal talk also here regarding that NSARS, you know, when you talk about the Igbo and the Fulani in Africa, in Nigeria to be specific, you know, there's a lot of that that's been going on here, you know, people being divided among the tribal lines and saying, okay, yeah, you know, the SARS police were being under the management of the president, who is a Fulani, he's not a Igbo and everything. So there's all this talk and everything. So the more this is happening, you're seeing the more we're getting divided. We've already been divided, but the more people are emphasizing these tribal things, white folks are just sitting back and saying, okay, so what do you guys want to do now? You want to demonstrate? Okay, go ahead and do it. Make sure you do it here and do it at this time. Make sure you stop at this time. Now pack your, because usually when we demonstrate, there's a lot of music here, out here, people drumming and music and singing and everything and dancing. At the same time, you know, chanting and saying, oh, what's happening to us is wrong, you know, but white folks are there, like they provide you the framework and the space to do it. And then they'll sit back and see how you guys are going to react, and then they'll let you go. But before I finish, one thing I want to say is that for the most part here, when the demonstrations are happening, all Africans want to say something. They want to take on, they want to stand at the podium and say something, you know? And I'm like, we all don't need to speak, you know? And some of us don't know what we're going to speak about. But because we're so emotionally charged, we're going to go there. One will scream it's Buhari's problem. One will scream it's the Igbo problem. One will scream it's the African corruption problem. One will, but none of them is going to scream about white folks. That's it.
Long live Al Sharpton. Context of white supremacy. Like, this is our global Sunday talk on racism. Do not be mistaken. It is 12:44 p.m. Seattle Daylight Savings Time. African 1884 is joining us live from Austria. It is currently 8:45 p.m. I guess Austrian Standard Time, the time switch and everything. But what he just said, wow, that is so painfully familiar. In so many respects, in terms of the emotion and having tons of people that want to talk. And because we don't understand racism, white supremacy, a lot of times what you metaphors, that's what, if I had to guess, when it's going to be a lot of emotion, you're going to end up with a lot of metaphors, a lot of rhetoric, a lot of cliches. It's not going to be logic. That is very common, and especially directed at other Black people. We will not get out and direct things at racist man, racist woman, unless it's Donald Trump. It will have to be, this is a white person that you are authorized to focus some attention on. But just the system of white supremacy in general, racist man, racist woman, white people in general, no. No, but then, yeah, the permits and all of the rest. That's why I said, like, something just... We're in the middle of a public health crisis. Like, even when that is not the case, I have never been an advocate of marching and protesting. I think I've been on record saying that for years. This would just be another sad illustration of why I don't think that sort of thing helps to solve any sort of problems, and that we should probably, I think there are many, exponential, use that word again. I think there are the list of things that we can do that would be a substantially, exponentially better investment of time and energy. That list is super long. Reading, learning, cleaning, sleeping correctly, eating correctly, exchanging. I mean, really long list of things that would be much, much better than being out in the streets, being it. Attacking another Black person. If I could pause for once. No name calling. We talk about anti-Blackness. That is another reason why that is so important. No name calling, one of the 10 stops. When you don't, or when you make errors, when you don't understand white supremacy, racism, you don't connect the dots, as has been said. End up making errors, get a little assistance. Racists, they will come with their COINTELPRO programs and all the rest to cause confusion. So it is very likely we will be encouraged, manipulated to focus our frustrations on other Black people. That's why it's so important minimizing conflict with other victims of racism. That is so crucial. Anywhere in the world, that is so crucial. The system is designed for that to happen exactly. Us to end up out in the, anywhere in the world, for us to be out there, system of white supremacy, and we're ready to strangle this black person. In the name of, I love that. That's it so many times. I love black people. I love my black brothers and Nigel. Rampage. Oh my God. Woo. Long live Al Sharpton. The number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. That scene has played itself out repeatedly. A group of black people willing to go and jump and attack another black person and needing white security to keep them safe. That scene has played out repeatedly all over the world, unfortunately. Not understanding the system of racism. Let's see if folks have a question they would like to sneak in. I guess, do you have a prediction, African 1884? Who do you think is going to win the election? Not that that's the biggest priority, certainly for you in the world, but if you have a thought.
I kind of see that it's going to be Donald Trump. I don't know why, but it just comes off like it might be Trump, you know. I the thing is that most of the white folks here, I don't know how they are in the U.S., but here white folks don't tell you who they vote for. And when you ask them, who did you vote for? They will say, no, that's my secret. I don't need to tell you that. So they keep their voting political life private. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, they still vote some right-wing party that you just happen to see the right-wing party having more votes. And I feel that in the U.S., I don't know if you can easily trust white folks. I know both either Democrat or Republicans, the context is still the same, white supremacy. But if, and maybe some black folks are leaning more towards the Democrats, I mean, apart from that, maybe, you know, some of them are also trying to be, you know, to lean towards the Republicans in terms of saying, okay, we just want to deal with whoever is going to provide us tangible results for black people. And if you're going to talk about reparations and you're going to make that happen, then we can vote for you. Now, do I see it in the U.S.? I'd see Donald Trump winning another term. I could be wrong, but yeah, I'm just going to wait and see. Yeah.
We shall see shortly. Yeah, and that's so common. They do the same thing here. Say, oh yeah, I'm gonna keep that private. You know, that's just between me and the ballot box. You know, I keep that close vest. Who I'm gonna vote for? I don't just broadcast that. That's seems to be a part of the code worldwide. And yeah, I do not, or I advise suspicion with individuals classified as whites in general, particularly about voting. Because yeah, they just. 2016, that should be all the lesson you need about trusting what white people have to say about who they're going to vote for, even how an election is going to turn out. Like, man, let's see, folks who Andrew would be so bummed because he wanted to talk about this. And I was thinking while you were sharing, like, are they protesting in like London, too, about the thing in Nigeria? Like, is that happening? Like, because I don't think, now I could be wrong, but I don't think they have been protesting about Nigeria here in the States. If that is the case, people who, you know, are in the States, if you all know that they've been protesting about what's going on in Nigeria, like here in the States, if that's happening in like New York or Florida or California, like, let me know. I don't think even here in Seattle where they protest everything, I don't think they've been protesting about Nigeria here in the States, but maybe I missed that one. But yeah, I was thinking like, dang, maybe that's why Andrew wanted to talk about it. Or, I mean, I'm sure, you know, he's been reading the reports and all that because they've been covering it in the news. But I mean, wow, I hope that is not happening where they're running wild in the streets. And man, would just even, and for folks in the States, don't you think Ice Cube would maybe need white security this week? Oh, it's pitiful. It's pitiful. Let's see. Retired firefighter in Florida. Did you have a question, sir?
You basically introduced my subject that I was going to ask about. Ice Cube and his attempt to present his ideas and understandings on what is needed by non-white black people to the president, in other words, negotiations with the president, and anybody's thoughts from anywhere outside of the concept that's called the United States. There's a historical background to this. I mean, as far back as the 1960s, James Brown basically did something similar. He didn't have anything on paper, I don't think, but and he was condemned for it by non-white black people. But anybody's report on the subject that is from anywhere outside of this part of the world. Thank you.
Let's see. African 1884. I don't know. Did you... on the scale of news, I don't know if that registered over there. Were you aware of Ice Cube and the controversy where he reportedly had talks with President Trump?
Yeah, I'm aware of that. And I think I saw there was a CNN, I think, with Cuomo, where he had an interview with Cuomo, and he was questioned in regard to if he votes for Trump and you know his change of, because previously Cube, if you look at the his I think first two albums and everything, America's Most Wanted and everything, and he was very vocal against the American establishment, you know, quote unquote the white supremacist establishment in America, and but now is approaching, he has a set of things that he wants to put forward for to benefit the black community in the U.S. And he was being asked if why is he going with Trump, and he was not really down with Trump right from the very beginning. So I caught wind of that. But I think that, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't really critique Ice Cube as much. I'll just go and say VGQ. That's what I'd say for that.
Right on.
Because I don't have a solution, you know. So if someone asks me, what would you do? Maybe I'll come up with a different proposition, but I wouldn't really go hard on him, on Ice Cube, you know. I wouldn't.
I had similar sentiments. And I actually stated the code VGQ.
Yes.
He might need security, maybe white security, unfortunately. But we did talk about that on the compensatory call yesterday. Anywho, number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if any of the folks, as I said, in the States, if you are aware of them protesting about what's happening in Nigeria, anywhere in the U.S., as they call it, let me know. If this is, you know, they're going down about this in Hawaii, Alaska, Texas, Montana, anywhere. I have not heard about that. I had heard the reports, just I hadn't heard if they were, you know, in the streets about this. Anywho. I'm trying to see if we can get Andrew. This is not our normal broadcast. We're only hanging out for about another 15 minutes or so. I'm trying to see if we can get Andrew on, because I did. He had asked specifically, and now I'm even more eager because knowing that they're protesting about this, I'd be curious to hear what's happening in the UK. But I'll see if we can get him on, sneak his views in as well while we are on the air. I'll check to see if other folks have a question. They want to get in. Let's see. Henry in Chicago. Did you have a question, commentary you wanted to add, sir?
All right. Greetings, Gustin. Greetings to all on the line and the listeners. Actually, there was a small protest here at the Nigerian consulate, but it wasn't on the scale of, like, say, George Floyd or anything like that. So there was a small protest, and I from my understanding, there are smaller protests in other cities, that particularly the Nigerian consulates. But other than that, yeah, there's no like full scale protests like, you know, you saw with the George Floyd or Breonna Taylor. But, you know, I was interested. I think African 1984 is on the line. Wanted to know if there were presidential candidates in his country, who would the white people there vote for? Just wanted to ask him that. But that's all I had in my mind.
I hope I understood the question. The question was if the presidential candidates in the U.S. or in Austria, who the white people vote for?
Yes, if you had, like, if there were, like, you know, a Donald Trump and a Joe Biden type candidates in Austria, who do you think that country will vote for?
Oh, for sure, Donald Trump. You know, I tried not to speak so much in terms of or use their language, how they describe the political parties here. So there's the extreme right, and middle left, and extreme left. You know, that's how they define themselves and classify themselves. And right now, the party that has more votes, more seats in the Austrian government is the right-wing, extreme right-wing party, you know. So I believe they would vote for someone like Trump. They would vote for Trump for sure. Because one thing, I mean, with Trump's rhetoric regarding making America great again, here there's a lot of that also regarding making sure that certain European values are protected, and migration should be pushed back on, and we should be careful on the migrants coming here, taking our jobs and everything. So people would vote more for someone like Trump.
Four more years. Much obliged for your question and the information, I guess. So he said that they have had some sort of smaller protest, nothing, you know, on the I guess larger, rowdier scale as what we've seen with some of the with George Floyd and some of the others, but some smaller gatherings, he said. I'll check to see if that's happened. But much obliged, Henry in Chicago. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you have comment, question you would like to get in. You have African 1884 with us in Austria. Our global Sunday talk on racism. I've been trying to get Andrew. I'm so bummed. See if we could get him on the program just to get and to get his prediction in as well. Let's see, while I'm dialing here, caller, last four digits, 9401, 9401. Did you have a question, comment?
Good afternoon. I was just going to comment on the question that you asked about the protests in the U.S. on the NSARS, and I guess Henry already answered the question, but that's all I had to add. But I'll add one more thing. I'm looking online right here, and I want to ask African 1884 if he's familiar with the European Commission Against Racism and Intolerance, and if he knows what it's about and what why did they form that that committee, if he's aware of it.
Oh, sorry, what's the name of the committee again?
It's called the European Commission Against Racism and Intolerance, ECRI.
Yes, yes. I'm familiar with it. I've heard of it. And I mean, usually at the European level, because you have the EU, then you have the different countries within the EU, then you have the European Parliament and the European Commission. So what the Commission was trying to do when they came up with this body was to see how other countries within Europe are managing and dealing with racism, specifically Austria, Italy, Germany, you know, because they have this anti-Semitism still going on very strong in those countries, and the history of the Jewish people between 1939 and 1945. So this body was created to see, okay, how are the individual European countries dealing with racism, what they're doing about racism. But if you ask me, I think they don't have a clear definition of what racism is. So, and they kind of like use the two words interchangeably, racism and intolerance, you know. So maybe I prefer not to marry and date a white woman. They'll say I'm being intolerant. Also, at the same time, I'm being racist. That's an example they could put out there for you. Or if you say something against, let's say you say, okay, what Nick Cannon was saying regarding the real Jews and everything, then they would call him a racist and everything. So they don't have a clear definition of racism and what it is. And as I understand it, and I think many of the viewers on this program do understand it, their definition of racism has got nothing to do in regard to reflecting the power structure that's between white and non-white people, specifically black people. You know, I don't think they're dealing with that. They're not dealing with the system itself. I think they're just dealing with maybe being called the N-word, or someone just casting out a bunch of Jews and saying they should go back to Israel, or someone denying the Holocaust. You know, that's what they deal with.
Another question I have is, because I'm reading here, and I was a bit confused. It says here that ECRI praises legislative measures to promote LGBTI equality, such as the recognition in 2018 of a third gender, diverse/open category, and introducing same-sex marriage in 2019. The government also adopted a set of recommendations on intersex persons. So is it a committee about racism and race, or is it just about race, sexuality, just a conglomerate of, oppressions?
I mean, if you just to go back to the title of the body itself, European Commission Against Racism and Intolerance. So the LGBT stuff comes in within the context of intolerance. So when you speak about intolerance, that's where they now put in religious intolerance, maybe not being tolerant to the LGBT community, you know, or not being tolerant to white women, you know. So They kind of like, when they look at racism, I think they focus more mainly on the way, what they say, anti-Semitism, you know, and then the intolerance again takes in, not being able to live along with people from the LGBT community. So again, the words that they're using and the definitions, again, they're not very clear to me. They're not very clear. Because I know what racism is, you know, and I don't want to get caught up in all those intersectionalities, you know, because they confuse me, you know. So just be mindful, you know, and I think, but they do that intentionally, you know, just to confuse us.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Context of white supremacy, the conflation. They will start off talking about racism and then somehow, yes, LGBTQI rights. We also want to talk about gay marriage, disabilities, elderly people get mistreated, people who wear bifocals. Like, what in the world? Like, very, very, they even did that at the White Privilege Conference that I attended. All of that. They had the, what was it, the gender neutral bathrooms and all the rest. Anywho, while we were getting our response from African 1884, we had Andrew join us live on the call from the UK. Awesome to hear from you, and happy Black History Month, sir. So glad to get you on the call. I was bummed because we ended up spending quite a bit of time talking about what's happening in Nigeria. Apparently, they've been having protests in Austria, where they even went to attack a black person. Can't say I'm too surprised, but we've been talking about all of that, and that was something that you had mentioned specifically when I emailed to let you know we were doing the program. Have they been protesting about what's happening in Nigeria, in the UK, and what are your thoughts about what's happening down there? Again, good to hear from you, and happy Black History Month.
Hi, Gus. Happy Black History Month. How are you? You all right?
Right, poorly.
Yeah. I hear that. It's an important issue that's going on, and I was just talking about it this evening. Really, I think there has been some demonstrations somewhere in central London. I do seem to remember either hearing about it on the news. I don't remember seeing any images of it on the news, but I heard it in the background in the morning while I was getting ready for work. So I do think there was some sort of protest about it. So I'm sure you've seen, clearly you've had coverage of it in the States. I don't know what form the coverage has taken in the States, but it's a lot of young people, a lot of students as well, that are not happy with the Nigerian secret police. And, I'm part of a men's group in the UK, and we've got Nigerian brothers that are part of that group, you know, so we've had quite a lot of discussion around it. And the police in Nigeria, like a lot of African countries and Caribbean countries, are just corrupt, you know, just simple, straightforward corrupt. Yeah. So it was only a matter of time, really. And Nigeria, to me, just is the first country whereby you've got young people who, and not just university students, by the way, just young people in general, that are showing their displeasure at the status quo. You know, our parents' generation put up with a lot of that nonsense from the people that were put in power by colonial powers. That's another thing that we have to remember. The people that were, the systems that were put in place by colonial powers. You know, we're talking about neocolonialism. So we're talking about entities that were put in power, whether it's Jamaica, whether it's some other part of the Caribbean, whether it's West Africa, Central Africa, Francophone, you know, what white people like to call Francophone countries. A lot of these entities that run these countries, except for Robert Mugabe, remember he came into power through revolution. So, but then they strangled this country. America, U.S. Satan, and the British powers strangled this country economically, forced him out, and put one of their puppets who is now in power in Zimbabwe. Remember, it was called Zimbabwe. It was called Rhodesia before. So, you know, we're talking about young people who are sick and tired of corrupt powers on the African continent. And I'm hoping that attitude of those young people is going to spread all over the continent and hopefully oust a lot of these old entities that have been there far, far, far too long, who are simply not accountable to anybody. Keyword accountability. And I'm hoping that's going to happen quite soon. You know, some people think it's going to take about 100 years for that to happen. But I'm hoping that's going to happen a lot sooner. I'm thinking, actually, it's going to happen in the next 20 years. What I mean by happen is that a lot of those old neo-colonial entities, you know, that came in after colonialism, and you know, when we enter that neo-colonialism stage, which is what we're still in, all of that raft of leader on the African continent and Caribbean has to disappear. Now, America, U.S. Satan, has got a vested interest of destabilizing a country like Nigeria. You know, destabilizing a country like Nigeria. Imagine, you know, you've got this whole thing about the secret police that the young people are protesting against. And guess what's happened? Lo and behold, all out of nowhere, not quite out of nowhere, but what's bubbled to the surface again at exactly the same time as young people rebelling against the status quo in Nigeria is the old angst between the Igbo people and the Yoruba people. I don't know if you've got a hold of that, Gus. It just seems to have come out of nowhere, I believe, to take the focus off this young-led revolution in Nigeria and to focus it back onto tribalism. Okay, I hope you've got that. So to move away from what's happened in terms of ousting or moving towards ousting the powers that be in Nigeria and creating a country based on accountability and not corruption, and moving back towards tribalism, you know, Yoruba versus Igbo, Igbo versus this tribe. All that is pure nonsense. Yeah. What's good about the young people on the African continent is that there's a lot more of a Pan-African viewpoint and less of a tribalistic viewpoint, you know, and we need to move away from tribalism, not just on the African continent, but also in the Caribbean islands. We need to move away from tribalism and move towards Pan-Africanism. It's one thing that the European powers, France and US Satan and England, the last thing they want is a Pan-African viewpoint on the African continent. They don't want that. Anything is better than black people working together. And what's better is frustrated black people that are sick and tired of the whole situation simply walking away from the situation. That suits white people, really. You know, when I say white people, I mean racists. You know, if the cap fits, let them wear it, by the way, because there's a lot of white people that may listen to this that say, actually, I'm not a racist. That's fine. You know, prove it. You know, but there's a lot of, you know, but that situation, black people walking away, seeing what's going on and walking away from it, that suits the racist white people, and but not a unified set of people on the African continent. So the whole thing about egging up, stirring up tribalism, which is what's happening now with Yoruba versus Igbo, you know, that is meant to counter what young people are doing at the moment on the ground in Nigeria and actually beginning to do elsewhere on the African continent. So really, one of the things we have to talk about is not just Tsars and those idiots, but one of the things we have to talk about is really how do we bring an end to a tribalism, my tribe versus your tribe? How do we bring an end to voting in Ghana and other African countries along tribal lines? Because that's what's happening. So we need to deal with that. We need to talk to our people about ending tribalism as much as getting rid of Tsars and those jackasses. You know, we need to actually talk about both actually in the same sentence. Because white people all they would do is divide and conquer along tribal lines, which is what the CIA have been doing, which is what they did in Ghana, and which is what they'll do all over the continent. When we've had that conversation, we also have to talk about the DRC and Rwanda and the whole thing about European powers in America stirring up trouble basically mashing up the DRC and giving little bits and pieces to Rwanda to go and get raw materials for them from the DRC as well. You know, but it's a very interesting time on the African continent at the moment. It's on a bit of it could go one way or the other, Gus. The young people could either get their way and bring an end to corruption and bring about an accountable system of justice on the African continent and oust and bring an end to neocolonialism, which is white dominance on the African continent behind the veil, like puppets, if you're with me, or it could just go back to a purely tribalistic state. And we have to be, you know, we have to be really clear. You've got the CIA running all over the African continent, doing practicing destabilization unless you give them raw materials, you know. But they're fighting for that now with China. Do you understand? So there's a lot more to it, but that's the general sort of picture.
Much obliged, Andrew, joining us from the UK. We are G-rated to have children try to participate. So G-rated, please. Much obliged. And we do have our no name calling policy. I do encourage, or at least on this program, no name calling. Just said that that's a big one to try to minimize conflict. I think even calling non-white people puppets That is name calling. If they have not said, I am a puppet, call people what they want to be called or whatever title that they have. One question that was asked, now that you're here, we can get your, because this is a quick one. If, I think this has already been answered, because I mean, Boris, anyway, so the question was, if there was a candidate, right, in London, he was running for prime minister, let's say Boris Johnson was going to step down. So if there was a candidate in London who was like Donald Trump, and there was another candidate in London who was like Joe Biden, who do you think people would vote for the next prime minister, the Donald Trump candidate or the Joe Biden candidate?
Interesting question. We've got that at the moment, though, haven't we? I mean, obviously, in this country, we've got Donald Trump's little brother, Boris Johnson, and then we've got Biden's little brother, if you like, the current leader of the Labour Party, and you know his name I can hardly remember sometimes, Keir Starmer, right? In other words, left and right, you know, two sides of the same coin, really, just racism, white supremacy. That's all it really is. So, you know. Who would, you know, if so, you know, when you look at Boris Johnson, you know, he's not as what's the word? He's not a businessman, you know, Boris Johnson's not. He is a racist, but then most white people are, in my personal opinion. We're talking about a matter of degree. And I think that about Biden too, and Trump. So if, you know, if Trump was in, literally, if he was in this country, and then you had someone like Biden, who would they vote for? Personally, I think they would vote for Trump. I don't think, what's his name? Nigel Farage. I don't think Nigel Farage, put it this way, if it wasn't for Nigel Farage, I don't think there would be a Brexit vote. I don't think this country would be leaving the European Union. You know, the guy, a lot of people did for some reason, well, not for some reason, a lot of people listened to him, you know, and if you like, him and Boris Johnson makes one Donald Trump. I think that's a good way of putting it. I think Nigel Farage and Boris Johnson add up to one Donald Trump. There you go. And what did people in this country vote for? They voted for them and Brexit. So in my opinion, yeah, they did. They voted for this country's version of a two-headed Donald Trump. Johnson, Boris Johnson and Farage against against whoever the Labour leader was at the time. I can't remember who the Labour leader. What's his name? The Labour leader at the time before Keir Starmer. What's his name? Jeremy Corbyn. So in the end, yeah, around Brexit on that issue, they voted for Farage Johnson, didn't they? So that's who. Yeah, they would vote. So they would vote for Donald Trump. Donald Trump, I'm going to make an assumption, would want Brexit. He would want that. He would say Britain first, and he would want Brexit, wouldn't he? You know, he's cut from that sort of cloth. So they would vote for Trump, I think.
When I was going to ask that question, I was kind of thinking, I think we already have the answer. Boris Johnson is prime minister. I was thinking that would be the case for many areas around the world. We already have the answer. Brazil, lots of, anyway, yeah, much obliged, Andrew.
Gus,
African 1884, yes, sir.
Sorry, how many more minutes do we have? Because I want to provide some context to something that Andrew said.
Oh, let's hear it.
Yeah, no, it's in regard to, again, there's also been that the same narrative here, regarding the SARS demonstration and how corrupt African police are. Or police in Africa. Now, I want to provide context to that. A lot of this corruption is by design. Why do I say that? The average police in Africa could earn, let's say, 150 euros per month or 100 euros per month. That's about $80 per month. So you imagine a man, his wife, four children, and that's what he has to survive on. That's what he has to live on. Yet, at the same time, he sees that there's a way that he can be able to make some extra money to take his kids to school, to feed his family. Let alone, let's not even talk about the exchange rates, in the sense that if I have the euro or the pound or the dollar, it has more value in Africa. But if I have the naira, I can't even bring it to the UK to do anything with it. I can't bring the Ugandan shillings to the European space to do anything with it. So the wage disparities, all these things create an environment where people in Africa have to be corrupt. And I know that we have to take responsibility for it, but we have to provide context to that. You know, so I've been pushing back on that here because I've at the SARS demonstrations, a lot of Nigerians are speaking about the corruption in Nigeria. And I asked them, are we innately born corrupt as black people? You know, because I always hear it in regard to black people. You know, and it's rare when you speak about it in regard to white people. Maybe you say Trump is corrupt, but you wouldn't say America is corrupt for the most part. You know, or white people in general are corrupt and everything. And, or America has a corruption problem. Usually Africa and black people, you know. So if you connect the dots and you look at the system, certain things have just been put here by design. And the example that I gave is in regard to the disparities in terms of wages, how much people are paid for the same work. A teacher will not get the same in Uganda as they would get in the UK. You know, same thing as a policeman. At the same time, also, the exchange rates, those currencies, they're really, really harming our people. I take a flight from here to Austria, I go to Uganda, I have more value with that money. That's a euro. But if I take the Ugandan shillings and I bring it to Austria, no bank will even accept it. Thank you.
Global system of white supremacy. Context is important. And absolutely, I was thinking that, like, I don't think it would be possible to get rid of so-called corruption anywhere in the continent, even if you do have, you know, black people who are doing incorrect things, which I am sure is true. But I don't think you could get rid of so-called corruption without eliminating the system of white supremacy racism, because that is what is producing, that is the root of the injustice that is happening on the planet right now. Especially black people being mistreated. Oh yeah, that is at the root of it all. The system of white supremacy racism, and especially even that area of the world. I think white people created the absolute boundaries of what is now called so-called Nigeria. And I think, just for context, for me, there are certain countries, and all of them have been mentioned this year. There's a list of certain countries, India, Brazil, China, Nigeria. There are others, but those are some of the major ones that, according to white people's reports, these are areas that are primed for enormous economic growth and potentially enormous population growth over the next century or so. Just Nigeria alone, they projected, will have 1 billion people. Just Nigeria alone, by I think 2100. White people did not seem happy about this. So anything like the huge numbers of COVID-19 in India right now, where they're saying India might even be overtaking the U.S. for most COVID cases. Same thing with Brazil, huge number of COVID cases, and their president Bolsonaro compared to President Trump. These are areas that I would pay attention to. So same thing with Nigeria, and they have oil-rich area, black, lots of melanin, black people, black oil, lots of black things there. But same thing with Nigeria. These reports about police corruption and all the rest of it. I'm just kind of be mindful of things that happen in these areas. Racist man, racist woman, racist child will probably do lots of meddling, lots of sabotaging these areas. This could be a part of that effort. Could be a pretext. We have to do something about this. You know, our officials are being assaulted in the streets. We need to intervene. Just pay attention. Let's see. Any other commentary? Did any of our listeners who dialed in have a question, comment they wanted to get in? Now we have Andrew, so now we have folks with the UK, or folks in the UK, folks in Austria. Any other questions folks want to make sure they get in?
Yes. Any one of the callers that is outside of the concept U.S., could they give us their job, what they do for, you know, what they do for work, and an example of workplace racism that they have experienced?
Should I go first?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Okay. I was previously working, I have a background in environment, specifically biodiversity conservation and management. So I was previously working for an organization that dealt with energy and providing small businesses in Africa with funding in case they want to switch the energy that they use from fossil fuels to renewable energy. Now, my experience, I left the organization now, it's been a year since I left it. But the work racism within the workspace that I experienced was from white women, in the sense that they would have projects in Africa and they would have all these white females being told to go to Africa. And, you know, for the most part, because if you're developing a project, you need to go to the country or specifically to a location where you're going to design that project so you can talk to the people and understand their needs and everything. So I was the only black person in the organization. But they'll be sending white folks to go. But they'll only come to me and consult me in regard to, okay, so how should we talk to them? How would it be if we do this with them and everything? But then they'll just let only white women go there to do all the traveling and everything and write down the project document. And I'll just be a consultant sitting on my desk and just waiting, you know? So I was like, you know what? I don't need to take this anymore, you know, because I know the context more than you guys and everything, you know? And I need to, if I'm going to talk to the people on the continent in regarding to what they need and everything, I would rather do that than you people do that, you know. So that was my experience. But otherwise, right now where I'm working at the same time, I mean, it's very subtle, you know. There's no way of escaping it in terms of you have to walk on eggshells, you know, for the most part. You know, if you come with suggestions, you're in a meeting, you're the only black person, and depending on what you say, if you're too smart, you get in trouble. If you're too dumb, you get in trouble. So you have to find a balance, and I'm struggling with that. Thanks.
Wow. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Andrew in the UK.
Anybody else?
Hello.
Yes.
I'm a school teacher, and not in a, you know, a couple of jobs ago, I think I told you this already, Gus, maybe one or two years ago, I think I relayed this, but you know, the school that I worked in, one head teacher got she got sacked for God knows, I think it was, my memory is that it's something like misappropriation of funds or something like that. Anyway, the assistant head teacher took over, and he just wasn't very good, really. He on my first day at that school basically was berating his line manager, the head teacher, which I found quite strange. But anyway, roll on, that head teacher went, and he got the job as interim head teacher. Now, that particular assistant head teacher decided to defend his colleague, or his friend rather, ahead of faculty. I was a head of faculty at that school, and another head of faculty decided to use the word nigger in the classroom, directed at a black male student. Now, I only found out about it because I saw the black male student sitting outside the classroom looking very unhappy. And I can't remember if I said, hey, what's happening, you know, what's going on. But I can't remember that bit because it was a couple of years ago. But what I do recall is all of the other students being very annoyed at that particular teacher. That's the assistant head teacher's mate, who was another head of faculty, and all the rest of those things. That particular boy brought his mum in, and it was, you know, quite a big deal. But the school did nothing about it. Did nothing about it that I know about. So anyway, that's one incident, right? I had already decided that I didn't really want to be a head of faculty anymore. So I was already going to leave, to be honest. I was sick and tired of being a school leader. I just wanted to be a class teacher, right? So anyway, this assistant head, for some reason, who was really rubbish at his job, decided to start trying to get on my case. Now, bearing in mind, as a head of curriculum, he had done nothing. I'm going to try and get right to it, but there's so much to the story that, but you know, I'm going to try and cut it short. This assistant head teacher who had become the interim head teacher, really, as a head of curriculum, his job was to make sure that there was a written curriculum in place in the school. And he just hadn't done it. It's as simple as that. He just hadn't done it, you know. So for one academic, the previous academic year, when I got there, not only was there no curriculum, the students that I took over had done no work. The previous academic year, they just hadn't done any work that made any sense. A friend of mine who told me about the job, who was the head of music, a Ghanaian teacher, he said when he got there, he asked the students what they were doing, what work they were doing, and the students, that's music, he's a head of music, and the students just said, we're just jamming. That's it. So for one academic year, the previous academic year, they'd spent it just jamming. They had no tangible coursework. They'd produced no tangible work. Anyway, the music students done really, really well in the end, as did my students as well. So it's not about our teaching, because our students respectively done brilliantly, considering they did pretty much 2 years of work in less than one academic year. Nonetheless, this assistant head teacher tried to get onto my case, and he started to bully another teacher who I line managed in some very ridiculous ways, right? Anyway, I left that school and got a job somewhere else as just a class teacher. But the bullying of the Ghanaian teacher and this other teacher that I used to line manage continued and continued and continued in some very, very strange ways. To the point where when Kwadjo, that's the Ghanaian teacher, the head of music, came into school, they told him they'd done so much. But in the end, they said, right, you're not allowed on site, go home, right? Because we think it's better for you to go home. There's no reason. It wasn't related to his work, because remember, the previous academic year, his students got some of the best grades in the school, if not the best grades, right? I mean, literally. The funny thing about all of this, Kwadjo and myself had been previously, in the past, forced out of schools, Kwadjo by a white male head teacher at another school, and me by a white female head teacher at my first school. So, and at the time, well, I speak for myself, at the time, you know, I was going through another issue outside of work, so I couldn't really focus on work.
Did somebody get cut off?
Let's see. Oh, I think he might have got a call. Let's see, because he's still... Oh, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. We couldn't hear you. Did you? It sounded like you got cut off. It stopped when you said you couldn't really focus on work. And I don't know if... Were you done at that point?
No. Sorry, okay. It's just probably... poor line. But yeah, I couldn't really focus on work. But at that time, but the second time round, Quadjo was ready for it, and I was ready for it. I wasn't working there, but basically, we relished the chance to take it to a tribunal. So we took it to tribunal, took it through all of the motions, and in the end, they in the tribunal in the UK, they interview you. An independent person comes to interview you. Take statements from the parents, take statements from the students, and interviews everybody involved. So, that's what happened. And at the very end of it, Quadjo was basically offered and took 20,000 quid. Kiba was offered £20,000. On condition, though, here's the thing, on condition that we don't go to the press before the September intake of students. That was the condition, and ever since, what I've said to African Caribbean workers in England is, whatever you become a professional, understand that what you need to do is understand tribunals as well. Part and parcel of working in England, if I'm concerned, as far as I'm concerned, for Black workers, for African Caribbean workers, is to understand how a tribunal works, because victimization of Black staff in England is very common, and they count on you not understanding or not having the courage, not having the stamina to go through a tribunal. You know, that's what they count on. No matter how professional you are, all of that really is by and by is irrelevant, really. It's just, you got to learn about tribunals and be very happy to go through one, because the amount of people that I know that have either gone through one or should have gone through one and been given, and really in England, we've got a term called constructive dismissal, which is when you're forced out of a job. It's very, very common over the years, So that situation, we were both ready for it second time round, you got to go into these things with no fear as well, nobody wants a hard life. Nobody wants to have to bother about this kind of stuff. Do you know what I mean? We just want an easy life like everybody else, really. But unfortunately, there's people at work that are not going to give you an easy life. They're not going to give you, or rather, they're not going to give you the same justice that they give their own people, and that's really what this is all about. So you've got to be ready to go through a tribunal.
Interesting.
Neutralizing workplace racism. Each Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Global system. We have folks who are outside the states who participate in neutralizing workplace racism frequently. Being prepared is something that we talk about often. Being prepared, and white people being promoted above you, even when they're not qualified, even when it seems you might be what they call overqualified. Maybe we'll come for some free consulting tips, but you wouldn't be a good fit for this project. All the time. Very, very common system of white supremacy. Before we wrap things up, because this is our shorter broadcast, we had a parent who wrote in, and she was talking about sharing racism with her offspring. And I know that, Andrew, you are a parent. I think your child is a little bit older than African 1884, who has a pretty young child. She says she has a preteen. Let me double check. Do you have children that are close to the preteen age? Do you have children that are close to like 10, 11, 12?
Yeah, my son's 14.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful. All right. So we had a parent. She wrote in and she said, I'm paraphrasing, but she said that she heard child was watching a movie of some sort, and I think she said the mom that she just pointed out a few bits of racism within the film. And her daughter started to cry, and she said, why does everything have to be about race? Very important question. So she said the mom went to console her, and she thought, man, have I been going about this the wrong way? And do people have, you know, thoughts about sharing this information with their children? And, you know, results. And she said, hey, I'm still learning too, you know, so I'm trying to clear up some of my own confusion and just ways of presenting this material so that it does not cause more problems and is not a traumatic thing for your child.
So what's the question, Gus? How to best talk about racism with your children, or what media to use?
Just yes. Tips for talking about racism with your child. Has it caused problems in talking about racism with your child? Yes.
The interesting thing is, I was literally having this kind of a conversation, literally just this evening. You know, just this evening. It's an interesting one because, you see, my son lives mainly with his mum, and that's not necessarily the issue. But, you know, I mean, if you live under the same roof as your children, then yeah, you know, because this is a thing. I, you know, like a lot of these things, you know, I mean, you know, it's good to, what's the word, ease your children into this kind of discussion. And if your children don't live, you know, and there's ways of doing that, do you know what I mean? If your children do not live with you full time, then you're talking about the information that, you know, how they're going to be raised, you know, their socialization is going to be different in different households. Are you with me? So depending on the frequency by which, you know, by which you see your kids or your child, you know, they may or may not have the values that you would normally want to put into your children. Does that make sense? So, for example, my son, when he was a baby, you know, when he was a toddler, you know, I used to take him to Kwanzaa celebrations, and all of that kind of thing. And, you know, and he was very, you know, and that's the direction we would have gone in effectively. You know? So it would have been a thing by the time he's 14, my idea would have been to have, you know, schooled him in all things Pan-African, if you like. Not just tribalistic stuff, but all things which is of no use whatsoever, but all things Pan-African. In other words, to have a love of Africa and Africans, and African history prior to the enslavement period. This is what I was literally talking about this evening. So you talk about Egyptian history, the 5,000 years prior to Egyptian, you know, to the pyramids of the Nile Valley. And then you talk about the Nile Valley, and then you talk about Great Zimbabwe. You could talk about the West African civilizations, you know, Ghana, Benin, and all the rest of those things before actually any powerful white people existed. So you could talk about all of that, really go to town and all of that. So really, the first 10 years of a child's life should really be steeped in that, as far as I'm concerned. You know, even white kids should learn about all of, you know, African history, you know, or before they got there. I mean, it's just never going to happen, right? But at least that's what we should do with our children. So, and the reason why that's important is so that we can position the enslavement period. Does that make sense? You know, there's no point, you know, I don't know about how it works in America, Gus, but in the UK, we were just talking about the fact that the only African, so-called African history that we got was looking at the slave ship and the triangular slave trade. That's it, because it benefits white people. It doesn't benefit us. So I would never just give my child slavery. Yeah, no. It would have to be contextualized with at least, you know, from the year they're born until at least 10 years old, 11, 12, maybe 13, I don't know, you know, with all of Africa first and everything I've just outlined. And then we could talk about what the Europeans done in terms of the enslavement period. You know, we could talk about that from an African point of view, not from a European point of view, from an African point of view. And then what's more important, Gus, let's talk about the future. How do we want the future of planet Earth to be? How do we want the next 200 years on Earth to be from an African point of view? As far as I'm concerned, there's no point talking about the past, no matter how nice it was, unless we talk about the next at least 200 years of how we want this planet to be, let alone the African continent, but the planet, right? And that is because our children are moving into the future. So we have to begin to talk to them about strategic planning the world, literally, and how they are going to basically run planet Earth, right? So they get a sense of the past and the present and the future from an African point of view. And we position them at the center of all of that. They're not peripheral players. No. They're going to be directing things, and so. But they're not going to get that in a mainstream school. They're not going to get that in an American mainstream school. They're definitely not going to get that in a European mainstream school. But as African parents, that is what we have to give to our children. Coming back to me and my son, you see, he's socialized for the most part not under my roof. You know, any black African centered parent that understands racism, white supremacy, really, man or woman, mother or father, right? I would simply say to really educate your children in the time prior to the enslavement period. You're talking about 10,000 years. Do you know what I mean? You know? Not just 400 years, do you know what I mean? 10,000 years. But in order for us to do that, we have to know about it ourselves, you know. So there's a little bit of work we've got to do, ideally, before we have kids. If not, while our kids are young or at the same time, we can learn alongside our children. We can simply say, all right, let's look for this together. You know, let's look at Great Zimbabwe together. Let's look at let's look at the Kingdom of Mali together. Let's look at the Kingdom of Aksum together. Let's look at these things. What do you think about it? You know, well, what does the word, Egypt used to be called Land of the Blacks. That's what it was. So we can begin to look at all these things together. If we don't know, we could learn with our children, you know. But the conversation I had tonight, and I totally agree with a friend of mine, was I agree. I wouldn't teach the enslavement period on its own in a vacuum. Now, I think it's actually quite dangerous to do that. When I was a child, we saw Roots as children, you know. When it came out, we went to school the next day because our parents, Caribbean parents, didn't arm us, and all Caribbean parents are different, but my mom didn't know anything about it. She didn't know nothing about Marcus Garvey, nothing at all, even though we're Jamaican. She knew nothing about it, right? So we just went to school. The white kid said, "Oi, Kunta, hey Kunta, come here Kunta." So basically they did it in the wrong school, though, because the school I went to was two-thirds, if not more, black, right? Black, Caribbean, mainly Jamaican kids. So they got a kick in. They just got a kick in. And so that's what I did, really. After every episode, you had a lot of angry black kids going into school and just beating up white kids. That's just basically what we did. That's not a good thing. What would have been better, and it's not their fault that they didn't know, what would have been better is if we had been armed with a whole load of historical knowledge about our continent prior to even watching Roots, that would have been better. And then we watch Roots, and then our parents talk to us about Roots, and then we talk about the next 200 years, right? And then we go into school. That would have been better.
Woo. Much obliged, Andrew. Being an attempted parent in the system of white supremacy is challenging work. Man, much obliged. And that too, like the it's going to be even more challenging if, you know, you're not living under the same roof and all of that and different influences. Like, wow, so important, as he said, to have these conversations before conception. I think that has been mentioned on the program repeatedly. That will wrap us for our Global Sunday Talk this time around. Not our usual broadcast length. We should be back at minimum for the book club. Cased Isabel Wilkerson, Cowbell. That'll be Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Almost done, thank goodness. Just check the schedule to see if we will be here before Thursday. Much obliged to African 1884, Andrew, joining us live in the UK. When next we speak, we might have a new president. Or it could just be four more years. We will have to see. Yeah, exciting times on the planet. We will hope that everyone can stay safe. Definitely take the Rona seriously and hunker down. But we will check in next month. And yeah, hopefully everyone will be safe over the next 30 days or so. And we'll be back regular time. It's the third Sunday of each month. Just got discombobulated with my computer issues. But chugging along. Thank you for your time and energy. Thanks for the folks in the state. Hope it was worthy of your Sunday, I guess, afternoon for joining in. Anywho, the suggestion, per usual, sobriety would be best anywhere in the known universe. We need our brain computer so that we can figure out what is happening around us. We are going to need lots of high-level thinking to solve this here problem. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled. Again, I would say hunker down. Now, folks outside the states have still said they got the Rona, exponential rise in cases and all the rest. And all of that would also be a great reason to hunker down. If we, those of us who are in the states, I mean, on top of all of that, armed whites. You go out, anybody is being loud, aggressive. You heard black fella on the subway over there in Austria didn't have a mask on, and they jumped on top of him, beat him down. No social distancing there. Hunker down. If you got to go out, you are alert. Checking your surroundings. If it looks like somebody is getting hostile, loud, this is not the time for verbal confrontations out in public. If you're in the States, you should be thinking, this person may be armed, especially if it's a white woman, a white man. This person could be armed, even a non-white person. Exit. Get to a safe location. We will try this later. There have been way, way too many instances of armed violence in the U.S. just this year alone. If you got to go out, you are sober. You are buckled, driver or passenger. If you are driving, you are not on the mobile phone. One, we need all of our attention so we can be mindful about what's happening around us. Two, minimize contact with race soldiers, just trying to do the small things. We are sober. We're not on the cell phone. We're buckled. The little things that we can do to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. All of that said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all. for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.